Thank you so much for this most gracious introduction, and thanks everyone for being here tonight. I'm not sure I know a lot about nation states, but I'm quite sure about the monster that characterizes this era. In the era of artificial intelligence, the monster is called Rocco's Basilisk. So what is this about? Rocco's Basilisk is basically a story, and more precisely, it is a bet. The question posed is, would you support the development of a super intelligent AI, yes or no? And of course, you're completely free to choose. But there is a twist to it, because what if you knew that this AI would be developed in any case, and then it will come back from the future for its former enemies, and then it will torture them into all eternity? So now that you know this, do you support it or not? Remember, you are completely free. I wanted to show you a picture of the basilisk right now, but unfortunately, right before I got here, I found out that my PowerPoint was all messed up and that all the pictures of the basilisk had been somehow mysteriously exchanged with this kind of pictures. I really don't know what this is about, but most definitely there are some guys here in Turkish street cleaner uniforms, and they form the word no, Turkish word for no, with their bodies. And unfortunately, I have to tell you that all the pictures of the basilisk were kind of swapped with these guys. So I cannot show you any basilisk, I cannot show you any, you know, fascist paper memes, I cannot show you any alt-right celebrities in this PowerPoint, because they were all exchanged with these people. So I googled it just to find out, you know, what happened. And sure enough, there's this whole thing of these people, you know, forming the word higher with their bodies, and it's of course a reaction to the Turkish referendum, in which, as you might of course know, the Turkish president is asking for a massive expansion of his already considerable powers, and he wants you to say yes to deregulating his powers. But you see, some people seem to disagree, and actually this guy here on the right, he became extremely popular. For some reason, he was even labeled a Verdana italic R. Okay, so but this is just a, you know, sidetrack. I want to come back to the basilisk now. I want to be very serious. This is the monster that comes back from the future to torture its enemies. It looks like a cross between a chicken and a lizard somehow. So once this very gloomy thought experiment was posted on a blog called Less Wrong, which deals with artificial intelligence, the owner immediately shut it down, you know, because he was fearing psychological damage to his readers. And then the whole thing became some sort of wacky tech urban legend. But I think actually this story has nothing to do with technology or AI whatsoever, because actually it works like a curse. It's a performative speech act that bullies and blackmails. It's an extortion letter which spreads contagiously by way of literal magic. Words become animated, conjuring the worst of all possible worlds, a virtual state of indefinite detention in a black box without any means of recourse. So actually, I think that this story or myth or bat or however you want to call it expresses an underlying paradox in this whole debate around artificial intelligence, because on the one hand, everyone or many people think that AI is like the pinnacle of science. It's a superhuman science fix. It's going to sort all the problems of the world. It's going to be the final solution to the problems of humanity. But on the other hand, science as such is, of course, right now under massive attack in many parts of the world. climate sciences, evolutionary sciences, not to speak of humanities, of course, all of those are being undermined by organized religion, reactionaries, extraction-based cooperation, and their government branches. So I want to show you just a small example of the attack against scientific institution. This is a fake Twitter account that went up quite shortly after the US election. It's the rogue NASA account that was created along with a long list of other alternative US government fake accounts, because some of them were censored or felt censored by the new White House. On the other hand, one could also say that a more material shutdown of NASA has been underway for quite a long time. This is the budget of NASA from around, I think, 1956, 58 to 2012. And you see that actually it peaked in 1967, and NASA got defunded ever since, and now the budget is more or less the size of 1961. So what happened in 1967? Of course, NASA won the so-called space race with the Soviet Union to the moon, and since then the budget has been going down. And what actually happened in this whole period of defunding? One can say it very briefly. In this period, space was basically gentrified. Cosmonauts became chauffeurs, you know, for super rich space tourists. State-run space agencies were redesigned as some form of Uber for autocrats, promising driverless rides to Mars. But I think that not only NASA's budget shrank, but even its name shrank somewhat. Somehow one of the A's seems to have disappeared from its name. After defunding and delegitimizing NASA, all that seems left are the letters NSA. And it's very interesting to see how both of these agencies deal with, let's say, the scientific commons or copyright or publicly funded knowledge, because NASA is quite remarkable. They have an open source policy. They put most of their scientific output online. Copyright policies are really admirable, and I do not really recommend that you try to use the NSA's equally publicly funded results in a similar way. So NSA or other companies like, let's say, Boston Dynamics, you know, these military tech companies, they are like the diminished, sinister version of NASA. They use AI-based technology to, you know, predict uprisings or build killer robots. And NASA is really still gesturing towards some sort of gift economy of scientific commons, and this is being replaced by the NSA's theft economy of data capture, interception, and secrecy. So we could say what used to be rocket science in the age of NASA could now be called racket science. And the name of the racket is the deep state. Why the deep state? Let's go back to the age of AI. This creates lots of tools with names like deep mind, or deep dream, deep learning, deep neural networks, which are fed by links potentially supplied by deep throats. So all of these represent a variety of literal deep states. But of course, the deep state is also a political term. It's already being mentioned in Baruch Spinoza's Ethics, among many other historical sources, as a state within a state, and this is a very standard definition. The deep states are combinations of elements of the military, industry, intelligence community, finance, big oil, parts of the media, national security, corporation government, and so on, which form unofficial shadow governments and parallel institutions. But in so-called peripheries or colonies, actually that's rather normal. So I will just show a bunch of completely disconnected examples at you. The British East Asia Company is probably the, you know, historically one of the largest example of a corporate military institution, no state institution. Another ones are, you know, various kinds of externally supported mafia or proxy rulers or other types of kleptocracy. Turkish notorious deep state of past decades, that's another, you know, example. So all these forms of government have been around for a long time and often in the guise of colonial or imperialist rule, and now they just seem to be more mainstreams, which seems also to have some positive aspects, which are described by my favorite political scientist called Carl Sharrow. He's an architect from London. He describes how suddenly people in Lebanon and Egypt become way more interested in US domestic policies, you know, because they see, okay, that's something we're familiar with. It raises so many interesting prospects. Will the deep state try to unseat the new president? Which side will the army take? How will Hollywood, the entertainment arm of the deep state, use its power to oppose the president? We are getting dizzy with excitement. So, on the other hand, or at the same time, you also have, you know, new forms of so-called truth production. And I just want to go back to this example of the fake NASA Twitter accounts to show you how this works, because after the first one was instituted, apparently 12 others sprang into existence almost immediately, and some of them are run by climate deniers and others are run by Chuck Berry fans, and here's one which is run by probably the Star Wars PR department. So basically you have a lot of different people who are pretending to be NASA right now. So the all truth, which is spread by these kinds of sources, is based, of course, on anonymous sources, lies, leaks, spins, paranoia. But science is not the only, let's say, fact-aligned activity that's under attack. Media and the judiciary are also under major pressure in many places. Deconstructing the judiciary, like in Poland, for example, or rewriting history, like in Croatia, just to, you know, show in some kind of random examples, denying scientific results, or simply jailing, firing, and expropriating all journalists, scientists, and judges, which is something that's popular in many countries. So what does Rocco's basilisk have to do with that? You know that monsters are sometimes heraldic creatures. They come to represent, you know, certain places. Like, for example, the city of London is represented by a dragon. And if you ever wondered why Basel is called Basel, because it has a basilisk, of course, as its heraldic creature. But monsters can also come to represent more than, you know, specific cities. They represent political systems, and of course the most famous monster in one of the most famous monsters in political theory is Leviathan by Thomas Hobbes, which is the name of a sea monster, but it is also Hobbes' name for a specific state formation, which is the state of the sovereign monarch. And why is this created? Because everyone is so sick of the so-called war of everyone against everyone, the state of nature in which people fight against another, there is no law, and they are too scared, and they surrender basically their weapons and submit to the law of the sovereign. They think it's a better idea. And I think that actually Rocco's basilisk, as a heraldic monster, if you like, stands for something which is almost the opposite. It comes at a moment when competing deep state factions, we create some sort of state of nature where, you know, different interest groups fight against one another without, you know, a strong law. But this is not the same state of nature, feudal state of nature, that Hobbes was understandably afraid of. Instead, this is a secondary state of nature, an artificial state of nature. It is a neo-feudal age. It's not about nature, it's about everything that's declared natural. For example, markets. Whatever markets want is declared natural, for example. So the state of nature is secondary, it's artificial, it's derivative. And if the basilisk is an artificial intelligence, one could call the state of nature, it symbolizes an artificial nature. And I have an interesting example for this kind of artificial state of nature. There was a pseudo-scientific experiment which was run in Arizona in the early 90s, which was called the Biosphere 2. And a bunch of scientists were locked up in this biosphere. It was airtight, and they had to be completely self-sustaining. They had even to produce their own atmosphere, their own oxygen, their own food, their own social bonds, and so on. And it was, of course, also a test for space colonization funded by a rich guy. So did it work? Let's say they somehow survived. The oxygen dropped to very dangerous levels. The climate was completely fucked up. The mammals went extinct, most pollinating insects also. The crew split into hostile factions. They wouldn't talk to one another. The project was abandoned after a while. And the interesting thing is that the, you know, strongest species that had the best survival prospects in this kind of environments were actually cockroaches and ants. They were species that turned out to be best adapted to an oligarch space colony. So why is this interesting? So one minor anecdote is because the manager of this project in its later stage was a person called Steve Bannon, which is now the key ethno-nationalist advisor to the US government. And his management style has been described as a sort of armed takeover of the premises after it failed to make enough profit. And actually some scientists really staged some sort of revolt against Bannon. They opened the windows of the biosphere just to get some oxygen inside, and they even broke some windows. And I think that these experiments in biosphere are a very, very good example for an artificial state of nature. Because there's one detail which is much more interesting and I think also has had huge social consequences, because the thing that was really successful in Biosphere 2 was the creation of Big Brother. And you know, Big Brother is probably the first reality TV show ever. What happened? A Dutch producer called John de Mol apparently saw some satellite uplinks from the biosphere and decided that he would, you know, create a reality TV show that was based on the same premises, an artificial, you know, so-called natural selection whereby the fittest, however this is defined, survive or progress. And one could say that, you know, reality TV as such is not based on selection, not even artificial selection, it's based on extinction. It is extinction as spectacle. So one can say that on this level, the experiments of Biosphere 2 have been extremely successful. On the level of political narrative, on creating a template, one could describe without any exaggeration as having become one of the main templates for autocratic politics, starting with the rule of you know, Italian Prime Minister Berlusconi, who was somehow escaped from trash TV in the 90s. So even if the biosphere had been completely, perfectly sealed, you know, something would still have escaped. The narrative of survivalist spectacle. And one just wonders, you know, what kind of thing is going to escape from this debate around AI? And actually, this happened already on several levels. We have already very, very strong social consequences of these debates. And this is not the existence of these super smart artificial general intelligences which know everything and manage the world, you know. That doesn't probably, most probably, exist yet. But actually, the thing that surveils you today, 24/7, that's not a fancy supercomputer, but probably it's something like your toaster. It reports on whatever you do, you know, 24/7 to your Fitbit bracelet, and it correlates what it gets from there to your Spotify playlist, and then all of them calculate the price for your health insurance. So these, you know, very, very rather low-tech appliances, they relate to shiny versions of artificial intelligence exactly in the same way that real existing socialism related to lofty visions of a class-free society. So we can say the thing that's already been realized is artificial stupidity. And right now, this is where AI is really, really powerful. In low-tech forms, such as bots, networked vending machines, and of course, production robots, and this is also where it's causing a lot of social disruptions through automation, gentrification, uberization, and so on. So these things are already busily restructuring society and thus contributing, of course, to the rise of all these post-fascist, neo-feudal, reactionary movements, governments, whatever. I want to show you a very interesting example of artificial stupidity. I wonder whether any of you has seen the film Prometheus by Ridley Scott. It's really, I cannot recommend it. I'm very glad you haven't seen it. It's really, really boring. But it makes a really interesting point. So I will tell you the plot. There is a venture, and I think you have heard the plot already. It keeps repeating. There is a venture capitalist, and he realizes that humans actually descend from a godlike alien race called the engineers, and he sets out into space with plans to reunite with these lost ancestors, and then he wants to become immortal. But when they finally find, you know, these forefathers, something unexpected happens because the gods are not very happy to see them. They turn out to be extremely hostile and ugly. And one might add, they are also very badly designed. This is the god. Yes. So, and they hate humans. They just want to get rid of them. And I thought back of, you know, Friedrich Nietzsche coining the phrase, God is tot, to refer to the end of Judeo-Christian morality. And I think that, you know, seeing this God, you have to rethink it, because definitely this God is not dead, you know, and it doesn't look too intelligent either. So to paraphrase Nietzsche, God is not tot or dead. Instead, God ist doof, or God ist stupid, just like a bunch of network toasters, or a Twitter bot, or a troll army. You know, all these things that are basically existing right now and changing the world already. And this takes me back to Rocco's Basilix, because something also escaped from this discussion, even though it was rather limited and took place on a, you know, Silicon Valley tech blog. But something strange happened because, you know, more or less the discussion continued and people started to debate how to optimize AIs and how to think like machines and all of that. And one of the unintended consequences was that it became some sort of involuntary incubator for the cultural ideas of the alt-right. The neo-reactionary subculture started among the Bay Area techno-libertarian subculture, particularly including the transhumanists, and the discussants included many of the later neo-reactionary celebrities, Curtis Yarvin, Michael Anisimov, and Nick Land, which, you know, span ideologically from neo-monarchism to fascist futurist. And the further ecosystem, of course, also included Peter Thiel, who famously claimed that startups were sort of like dictatorships. But the interesting thing is, I don't believe, and I don't think anyone believes, that, you know, the alt-right started from this particular blog. That's, you know, that's not the case. There is a very interesting text written by someone calling herself Josephine Armistead, and she lists many, you know, different sources, Gamergate, all sorts of different events happening to create this atmosphere, and she mentions one very interesting event, which I never would have thought of, and she said that the destruction, the death of free software culture, and the privatization of code was extremely important for that as well. One example she mentions is the destruction of the MIT Artificial Intelligence Lab that somehow was brought down in 1983 by a company that did not share its code. And the author sees this as one of the early defeats of a type of, you know, free access hacker culture that didn't believe in intellectual property, and they didn't believe in locks or vaults either. There are these really funny anecdotes about these labs that, you know, all the hackers in there had all the keys to all the rooms, and if they didn't have the key, they would force the youngest one to crawl through the ceiling to go wherever they wanted to go. And they were sort of brought down by copyright. So just as Big Brother escaped from the biosphere and realized as the terror of reality TV and also as eternal real mass surveillance, something else seems to escape from the sphere, you know, of Roccus Basilis, this very, very small myth already. Some, at least, of the cultural ideas of the U.S. alt-right and the new U.S. ideological elite. States should be corporations. Startups should be run like dictatorships. So-called natural hierarchies should be protected, and so on, and so on. And of course, you know, all these low-tech things is not, of course, the only thing that's happening. Research is, of course, ongoing also into the more high end of these technologies. Peter Thiel's company Palantir, for example, is linking different immigration databases, probably to also facilitate potential mass deportations under the Trump regime, thus, you know, actualizing another real scenario of Roccus Basilisk's detention scenario. So I want to come back to the beginning now. There is a major reactionary push in many countries worldwide that delegitimizes science, legal systems, the media, all systems to assess facts and evidence, and simultaneously artificial intelligence is being heralded, you know, as this major technological and economical bonanza. This is the main, you know, set of tensions expressed by the basilisk, and people are still, you know, completely hallucinated and mesmerized, waiting for future super intelligences to come, you know, but they fail to realize that actually they are already sitting right in front of them in the form of artificial stupidity. of, you know, inane hotline bots and angry toaster mobs, which cause profound social disruption, as well as the reorganization of society into deep statelets fighting one another, into submerged micronations run by CEO sovereigns. And the heraldic creature of this mess is Orcus Basilic, and it threatens to detain people like this guy here. And this is actually not fake news, it's real. It says, a NASA scientist has been imprisoned in Turkey for 8 months. He was working at NASA for the past 3 years as a senior research scientist studying space radiation effects at the International Space Station. So why was he put in prison? And he's been there for a while. According to the prosecutors, the person that was accused of masterminding the coup, recent coup, Fethullah Gülen, gave blessed $1 bills to his followers, which means that everyone who has a $1 bill has now become suspect for membership in a terrorist organization in Turkey. And this is a quote by the prime minister, who said that with one American dollar, the Gülen organization turned the children of this country into monsters. So this scientist has been found in possession of a $1 bill, which seems to be evidence that he is a terrorist. So this is probably not going to happen to most of you, mostly because you're not a NASA scientist, but also because right now, at least, you're not in Turkey. But still, and now I want to come back to the beginning, you could get detained by Orcus Basilisk. So what do you do in this case? And there are several possibilities. Let me talk you through the first one, which is a bit more extended. Let's assume that Orcus Basilisk is the heraldic monster of a deep state system, just as Leviathan was the heraldic monster of the sovereign nation state. It stands for an artificial state of nature in which, you know, the survival of the fittest is spectacularized by reality TV. But what kind of social contract does it represent? On the one hand, I answered this question already, it represents the dissolution of social contract. The social contracts are canceled, you know, it goes back into a state of, let's say, multilateral warfare. But there is also another aspect to it. The social contract is also automated. And both the dissolution and the automation go hand in hand. What do I mean by this? An artificial intelligence, I mean, a fictional one, like the one represented by Orcus Basilisk, or for that matter, also blockchain contracts, smart contracts, DAOs, all of them promise to automate political decision-making and replace them with a programmed function. Bifo Berardi was quoted already today by Felix Stalder, is very clear what this means. The idea is to introduce determinism into politics and to make sure that politics is predictable, it's quantifiable. He says, techno-linguistic automatisms act like a post-humanist god whose operational force is inscrutable and superior to human action and will. So an automated contract is like a god which you cannot question. And in the story of Orcus Basilisk, we see exactly how this works. We are promised some kind of choice, you know, either you can support the development of the artificial intelligence or not, but then out of the blue, this thing starts threatening you and bullying you, so in fact, you end up having no choice. And in a larger sense, this is precisely what whole societies have been hearing for decades. There is no choice but to accept the slow slide of the no alternative model of neoliberalism into the openly autocratic rule of the basilisk. There is no choice as to how the benefits of automation are redistributed. There is no alternative to platform capitalism. There definitely the detention of around by now 40,000 so-called terrorists in Turkish prisons has to be accepted. And if you say no, you might be detained indefinitely under state of emergency laws. So now, again, what to do against these bullies and threats? One could think back of, you know, these free access guys at the MIT artificial intelligence labs, because you would have a hard time detaining them, you know. You remember they had all these keys and they crawled through the ceiling. The basilisk would have a hard time with them, but I don't think that is actually the solution. Once I started thinking of it, is I realized that actually these guys, they are so smart. Maybe it was them that messed up my PowerPoint. And I tell you why. Because how if these guys tried to send us a strong message from the future? Because maybe the thing that really exists in the future and is coming back from the future now is not an autocrat, bully, basilisk, but a, let's say, cooperative of red hackers that have finally realized a sustainable and fair economy of free access. And they are very clearly telling us from the future that if you want them to be the future and not the basilisk, you need to do something right now. You might get bullied and detained and threatened, and many are already being detained and worse. But if anyone tells you you have no choice, then most definitely you should say no. And actually, now I come to think of it, you know, I think a lot of people in workers' uniforms were already sent back from the future to tell us precisely back, but we were too stupid to notice. I mean, look at these guys here. Now, you know, that I know, I have cracked the secret encryption of this photo, and I tell you what it means, you know. And because we didn't listen to them, they keep sending us their messages, and now they are sending us their most elite and senior representatives to make this point. And of course, as you know, I'm just kidding, you know, I don't believe that some miraculous red hackers from the future are coming back to the present to fix anything whatsoever. As you already guessed, of course, it was myself trying to alter the course of the future by, you know, erasing the basilisk from my PowerPoint. And I'm afraid that if you want to change the future, you cannot rely on some time travelers, you know, from the future to bail you out either. So let me rephrase the question of Rocco's basilisk, because now, after this whole talk, you are faced with a new choice. You are presented with an entity that says you have no choice, and that if you don't agree with him, he will in turn detain you in a world without any alternative forever, in which any decision is automated and determined by some sort of alternative fact science, by stupid gods and extinction spectacles. Now you can decide. Of course, you're completely free to decide. And in case you prefer to disagree, I can exactly show you how. Thank you.